Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service, the only opportunity offered to the broader community to be informed on the issues and current affairs from a First Nations perspective. This is Chelsea Bond with Let's Talk.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning into Let's Talk. I would like to start by acknowledging the traditional owners on the land in which we're recording from this morning and the land in which you're listening from. This morning I have two special guests on Let's Talk, and we're going to talk about health today. And joining me all the way, of course, from Inala, is my sisters, Sonia Eggert and Sissy Tyson. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
They're really excited to be on the show this morning. But we're going to talk about a whole lot of things. We're going to talk about health. We're going to talk about some events happening next week out in Inala. We're going to talk about the awesome work you do at the Southern Queensland Centre for Excellence in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Health, Primary Health Care, which we know as Inala Indigenous Health Service. But before we get through all of that, I thought we could start by first, as is tradition in this show, is to tell us a bit about who you are, who's your mob, where you come from. Now, Sissy looking at me, she's looking at Sonia. So, Sonia, tell us who's your mob and where you come from.
So my family belong to the Noonuccal and Gurrumpul clans of Quandamooka, Minjirabar, or most people know it as North Stradbroke Island. Mm. I'm in the Moreton Bay area. My family are from Inala as well, so I've grown up in Inala. And, yeah, so I'm a mum of one nearly six-year-old boy, William.
Mm-hmm.
He's having a birthday on Monday, so happy birthday to Willy Boy.
Happy birthday, Willy Boy. And Willy Boy's a pretty good footballer.
Yes.
Plays for Western Isla.
He plays for Western Isla. This year was his first time playing footy, so it was really exciting for our family. I'm also a daughter, granddaughter, auntie of Analia, Azalea, Willow, Mateus, Manaya, Amaziah, and Daisy Kay and Hazel.
Oh, all them names. So how many nieces and nephews you got?
Seven.
Wow.
Wait, eight. Sorry.
Eight. Who did you forget?
Well, that was just a new addition to the family just recently. Oh. So, yeah, got to get used to saying eight.
And how many kids in your family? How many siblings you got?
I'm one of eight.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm the third in line, oldest daughter.
Awesome. All right, Sissy, who's your mob? Where you come from? Sissy got biggest mob too.
So we're Gugu Yalanji tribe up at Laura. I grew up in Inala and Acacia Ridge. I have five children and two grandkids and a tribe of nieces and nephews.
Mm. You got any shout-outs? So this show gets broadcast through the National Indigenous Radio Service. You got any shout-outs you want to give to people? No? Hey, you got to answer. You can't just shake your head at me. You got to actually...
A shout-out to my team at Inala Civic Centre.
Oh, Inala Civic Centre. Now, tell us, Sissy, what's your job at Inala?
So I'm a research officer. So I do different trials and surveys that come through the clinic to see what's to improve our mob's health.
Mm-hmm. And how long have you been there for?
3 years now.
3 years. Awesome. And Sonia, what's your job at Inala?
So I too have been a research officer there for 4 years, and I've recently just started in a new position as a project officer, so a bit more of a case management role, but still involved with research.
Mm. Now, I've given you, ladies, the task of giving me some songs, a playlist for today's show. I thought we might cut to a first song, an Archie Roach number. Sonia, can you tell us about what this song and why you picked this song?
So I didn't actually pick this song when I knew that I was going to be on the Let's Talk show. I called my grandmother, Sharon Costello.
Ring Nan.
A shout out to my grandmother, Sharon, over there on Minjirabar. So I said that we get to play some songs, and I asked if she would like to request a song, and she did. She wanted to request a number by Archie Roach, and I knew that it would be an Archie Roach song. So she's chosen Jabakai Lady, and the reason that she's chose this particular song is to honour Aunty Joyce and Uncle Lance up in Cairns, the Riley family, and she just wanted me to play that for their family.
Here we go.
Are you looking for your family? Identified as Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander, a Queenslander, and over 18. If you have been separated from your family and culture through forced removal, fostering, adoption, or institutions, or someone in your family was taken away, Link Up Queensland can help you. We do family history research and tracing to find your family you haven't met before so you can have a reunion. Link Up Queensland, 1-800-200-855, station sponsor.
This is Chelsea Bonn with Let's Talk.
Thank you for tuning in to Let's Talk this morning. This morning we are talking health, and I have two health research officers from Inala Indigenous Health Service. We're going to talk about a few health issues. I dragged them on the show because they asked me to promote an event coming up next week at Inala, and I said, well, you've got to come on the show and talk about it. So they're really excited to be here to talk on radio live for the first time ever. And so tell us, Sonia and Sissy, what is this event that's happening out at Inala next week?
So each year there's an International Overdose Awareness Day that's held all around the world, and it's held on August the 31st. So this year our service, along with Inala Wongara and Inala Elders, decided to have a community event to acknowledge Overdose Awareness Day. So we're going to be having an event on Thursday the 31st at the Inala Elders starting at 10:30.
Mm-hmm.
And basically we wanted to have this event to acknowledge that that we have lost people in our community through this way, and also that there's still a lot of grief that's currently being felt by the family that are left behind.
Mm.
So we really wanted to have an event to raise awareness, acknowledge that grief, and also to reduce the stigma that is related with drug use and drug overdose.
Yeah. I mean, I was surprised to hear about this. I didn't know there was a global, Overdose Awareness Day. And we're used to, like, we have diabetes awareness days. We have kind of, awareness days for all kinds of health issues. And in looking at the reasoning behind such an event, it kind of makes sense, the need to reduce the stigma, but also support the family and friends of loved ones who have been lost. And because we know overdose is a preventable death. So it's really important to, on the one hand, try and create awareness to prevent losing more people, but also to put our arms around those who are still grieving the loss of loved ones as a result.
Yeah.
Can I ask about the event itself? What's happening out there? What can people expect when they come out to the event?
So we're having the event at the Inala Elders venue. We're having two of our local community workers, Ian and Jake. They're going to be our MCs for the day.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll basically have a small ceremony where we'll have some guest speakers talking about drug overdose, and also have a bit of a focus on loss and grief as well. And then following the ceremony, we'll have a feed like we normally do with
as we do. Good events. Food. So just to read, International Overdose Awareness Day is a global event. It's held on August 31st every year. Do you know how long it's been around for?
It has been around for quite some time. We've actually, in our community, it's not something that we've had an event for in many years. So. Mm.
Can I ask about what sparked the having an event this year?
So we had a community member in Inala, young lad, pass away from overdose, and it's getting more common and common in the community. So it was about. So we thought, okay, we've just realised that we do this, so let's promote it in our community and try and push, to support our mob and let them acknowledge that there is an awareness day.
Mm.
So that has pushed Sonia and I to get more involved into the Overdose Awareness Day.
Yeah. And I'm thinking about that young man who was not so young, was a dad and a granddad. Mm. And we know these deaths are preventable, and how do we, I think it's important to look at how we, prevent this from happening to more of our men in our community, more of our women. It was interesting, I was reading a bit about overdose, and there's some study, I think, in 2012 that globally that's over 100,000 people have lost their lives to overdose. And in Australia, it's the figure's around 1,400 people have lost their lives to overdose, which is higher than the number of people who have lost their lives in car accidents, road tragedies. And it surprised me. We hear a lot about, preventing road accidents and a lot of public campaigns around that, and we hear less about how can we prevent overdose and also support families who are grieving. So I think it's a really important event that holding up, important for the community, and this is something that affects not just Indigenous peoples but the broader community. If people want to come along, how can anyone come along, and who should they ring to find out more?
Yeah, so it's open to anybody to come along and join us for the day. They can contact our clinic on 3101 4222. Our service also has a Facebook page, and Anala Elders has a Facebook page, and so does Anala Wangara. So mm-hmm. you can check out the three Facebook pages to find out more about the event as well.
Mm. So. Which leads us to our next song. Sissy gave us this song, and it's probably an appropriate song at this time from, is it Latricia McNeil? Someone Loves You, Honey. Why'd you pick this song, Sissy?
So I've always liked this song. but recently, my partner's heard it a few times, Tony Vickers.
Shout out to Tony there.
And in the last few weeks, he's actually really liked the song, so he plays it a lot. So this is a shout out to Tony.
To Tony. Someone loves you, honey.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Thurston. You know, in football, they say it's important to get off to a good start, and the same thing counts for our kids. That's why kindy is so important. It sets them up for a better future. Get your kids to kindy. It's a deadly choice.
If your child turns 4 before June 30 next year, they can start kindy in January. Get your free kindy kit when you have a health check at your local clinic. For more info, visit deadlykindies.com.au, an initiative of the Institute for Urban Indigenous Health.
Station sponsor.
This is Chelsea Bonn with Let's Talk.
This is Chelsea Bonn with Let's Talk, and I'm with Sissy Tyson and Sonia Eggert all the way out from Inala, and we're talking health this morning. I think, Sissy and Sonia, this is your first time appearance on live radio, yeah?
Yep.
They're really excited, and they're sitting here in the breaks. We have the mics turned off, but in the breaks, Sonia's sitting here going, I hope these mob are listening to these songs we're requesting for them. Bless. So I hope yous are listening. Hope yous have been listening. And we hope we named all the nieces and nephews and didn't leave anyone out. I love that song, Someone Loves You, Honey. We all need to be reminded that someone loves us, hey? I want to talk about how you fellas came to work in health. Because, Sonia, I mean, you were working as a teaching aid. What are they?
Yeah, so prior to coming to Indigenous Health, I was working in Inala in various primary schools there as teacher aide, bit of admin work as well. So I started out on the Inala Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Community Jury for Health Research.
Mm.
So that's something that you started, Chelsea, and so I was a community jury member sitting on that group for a few years.
Mm. And for our listeners, that jury was a kind of like a committee established of community members who would make the decision on what research the service would undertake, so that it was the community had some control over the research being undertaken within our service, and it wasn't the staff that decided, but our community members, a broad cross-section of community members. So you're one of the members of the jury?
Yeah, and I guess it was quite interesting because, you know, as a client of the health service, you just go to the health service and, you know, see the doctor and see the nurses and whatnot. So I actually didn't know that there was this whole other thing happening in the background.
Mm.
And so it was quite interesting to me. So in that time, I had a baby, and so I was on maternity leave, and a position came available at the service for an Indigenous research officer, and it suited me quite well because it was a part-time position, and I thought, oh, I'll give it a go, and I've just been there ever since. So, yeah, that's how I sort of came to the service.
Yeah, and I mean, research is an interesting thing because people typically don't sort of, as kids go, when I grow up, I want to be a researcher. But now you're finding yourself in that kind of role. Why do you think it's important for black fellas to be in these kinds of research roles? Or
I guess it's important, and you know, the community jury is really important within our community and is really important to the health service, and the health service really values it, and the researchers who come to the jury really value it as well, because it's important that we're a part of that process. That the research that's being done is appropriate, is done in a respectful way. And as a researcher, I can have lots of influence in that area. So, so it's really important that we do have Aboriginal people involved in research.
Mm. Now, Sissy, you've got a different story of coming to work in health than Sonia. Tell us about how you...
So I used to work in Australia Post in the parcel facility.
I was saying you used to pack boxes, but no, it's parcels.
Parcels.
Get it right.
Parcels out. and then, you know, I've done different jobs and whatever else, but I never knew what I wanted to do. Mm. By then I'd had 5 kids. So I thought health came to my mind one day.
Mm.
Okay, let's do health. I want to help my mob. So that's what I wanted to do, so I rung you, Chelsea.
As you do.
Yes, as I do. I'm like, how do I get into health? I want to do health. That's what I want to do. So I went and did a Certificate 3 in primary healthcare, Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander.
Mm-mm.
So I do my certificate and I do shift work on top of it.
So you're doing shift work, five kids. You had grannies by that time?
I had one grandchild living with me at the time.
One granny living with you and then starting. So you were doing night shift?
Yes.
Bless you.
So Tony would look after.
Ah, that's why we love Tony. Looking after them kids. Good on him.
So I did the Certificate 3. I applied for one job at Inala. I didn't get it. And then, of course, Chelsea said there was another job going. So I applied for that one. And here I am.
Mm. And tell us what you do in that job, because I think it's really fascinating that you go from packing parcels to doing the work that you're doing. Tell us about the job that you started out doing in research.
So my first trial, which I'm still doing, is ears. So kids that have middle ear infections come to clinic. We do a randomised trial.
Okay, for our listeners, what is a randomised control trial, Sissy?
Okay, so computerised, you get told if they're going to go on antibiotics or if it's just going to watch and wait with pain relief. Because, you know, our doctors just, doctors in general, always just give kids antibiotics, antibiotics, antibiotics. So it's never been done before, so we're the first to do it in our mob. So I do that. That's been going on for 3 years, still going.
And what do you do in that role? Like you have to use machines and stuff. You have to tell the doctors what to do. Tell us about that the day-to-day work that you do as working on a randomised control trial.
So we use some good technology these days. So we have a tympanometry that diagnoses if it's got a middle ear infection.
Mm-hmm.
And we've also got a video otoscope so we can take videos of the kids inside the ears. And then there's follow-ups to it. And, of course, we have to train the doctor. I have to train the doctors and the nurses, child health nurses or whatever, how to use the equipment and just check up on them, you know, frequently and help where I need to help them because sometimes, you know, people, they don't understand the doctor's lingo. So I will talk it in basic lingo and I'll support them and advocate for them when needed or whenever they want me to.
I just love the story of where you know, five kids, grannies, night shift, putting yourself through study as a mature age student, and now you're in a position where you're training up doctors how to use clinical equipment to effectively diagnose kids with acute otitis media on a national randomised control trial. It's, like, brilliant. Can you tell me about your training when you first started out in the role? Who trained you in using this equipment?
So one of my, what would you call her, colleagues, co-worker, down at Western Sydney University came up and trained me how to use the equipment. At first it was doing my head in. I'm like, there's no way I can do this job. No way. I've never done so much reading in my life and Googled. But once I started using the equipment, I would work practice on the colleagues and my family members.
All the nieces and nephews come in handy.
And that's how I end up learning, getting the confidence how to do it all.
I heard you were testing them kids on holidays, school holidays, checking their kid, all the kids' ears, testing that equipment.
Even the staff in our office.
Even the staff. But you also had some specialist training. You got to go away and do a specialist clinical placement.
Yes, Dr. Kelvin Kong down at John Hunter Hospital in Newcastle. I was down there with him for a day, so it was really good. He's part of our trial as well.
And Dr. Kelvin Kong, of course, he's like the first Aboriginal ear, nose, throat surgeon in
Australia,
the country.
Yep.
Is he still the only one?
As far as I know.
And he's been an important mentor for you in this space?
Yes.
And you're making me do all the work here. And this year you and him had to keynote at an What was that conference you keynoted at? It's a global acute otitis media conference?
Yes, down on the Gold Coast.
What was that like?
That was very nerving, very nervous for me for once. Very nervous, but it was good. It was good.
Can I ask, why do you think it's important for us to be doing research in a health service? Do you think it's important? Should we be doing research in?
I think it's important because, you know, there are non-Indigenous research officers and they can't do things that we can do. They can't connect with our mob the way we can. We can talk different lingo ways to our clients than they can, and we connect better.
What is Sonia? I know you've both of you've had a role as being a research staff on quite large research projects where you have to kind of, on the one hand, you get trained up to do research, but you're also training up the researchers how to do research better with our mob. What do you think are some of the lessons that you kind of have to teach non-Indigenous researchers when they're coming to our communities about how to engage with our mob? What are the common kind of things you think that people need to know about if they're doing research with blackfellas?
Just the particular, not just the cultural protocols, but the community protocols as well. So there's a lot of two-way sharing that goes on between us and researchers, whether they're Aboriginal researchers or non-Aboriginal researchers. So there's lots of two-way sharing, and it's really important that they understand our ways of doing things.
And what do you think the sentiment is in the community towards research? We often hear, you know, that for Indigenous people are the most over-researched people in the world, that some sort of resentment towards research. How have you found the community and clients' response to being asked to be involved in research? Are people generally happy to be involved, or do you have to kind of explain people why it's important and stuff?
So explaining it to them is probably what gets them into it, instead of just getting straight to it, the point, you know. And I've noticed with if non-Indigenous people do it, they don't connect to the story as well, where when we say it, we get, you know, we're very thorough how we tell them and how we speak, so they understand better coming from us, and then they're willing to do it.
So I guess, like, following on from what Sissy's saying, is that I think all the research that we've been involved in, having our community participate in that research, we haven't had many barriers. So we did another research project at the end of last year, and that was asking people about their alcohol use and using an iPad to do that. And with that particular research, Sissy and I were the lead researchers on the ground in that. We didn't have any problems getting people to participate in our research. So I think having people who are from the community who are Aboriginal are very important to be able to make the research happen.
I mean, because asking people about their alcohol consumption, it's a, you know, sensitive issue. You often, as a researcher, asking people personal information. And it's that, I think it's not just about being an Indigenous person, but knowing how to be in relationship with other Indigenous people in the course of, you know, how to yarn with mob and explain things properly and respectfully, and being able to relate to people. Now, you both now have careers in health. Where are you thinking of going in terms of your career in health? Are you going to stay in health? Is it research? Is it clinical service provision, community work? What excites you most about the space that you're working in, and where you'd like to see yourself?
I think for me...
Sorry, I didn't give you half of these questions before the show. I'm just putting it on yours now.
I think for me, in the recent years, I've been quite interested in drug and alcohol.
In researching drug and alcohol, not actual drugs and alcohol. Yeah.
Yes.
Just to clarify, Sonia.
Yes. So I just recently attended a conference around drug and alcohol misuse. So that was really inspiring, and I feel like that's where I sort of want to be. But I also have a little passion for child and maternal health. So I'm sort of torn in between. So that's sort of the direction that, one of those directions I'd want to go to.
Sissy, what are you going to do when you grow up?
I thought I did grow up.
Where do you see yourself? I mean...
So I do have a passion for drug and alcohol and suicide as well. I don't really know exactly what area to go just yet. For now, I'm just going to stick to my research and do all the different trials I do and present at different conferences.
Keynote a few international conferences while you're at it. Nothing big.
Nothing big. It's pretty small. I don't know yet. And I'm still doing, and I'm in the process of still doing my diploma.
Awesome.
So And, of course, Chelsea wants me to go to uni.
Yeah, the pair is on. Yeah, that's the next thing on.
That's a bit further down the track. But, yeah, I'm just happy where I am for now, I think, and just worry about my studies. And we help out in, you know, certain areas in the clinic as well. So we don't just do ours. We just help where we need it.
Mm-hmm. Have you got a preference for, say, like clinical service provision versus community-based work or research or in those areas that you're interested in?
I don't mind clinical.
Yep. You're quite good at clinical.
Mm. I like clinical, I like research, and I like helping out in the community as well.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Okay. Well, we're going to cut to our next song. Now, Sissy, this next song is Denny and Lizzie. Can you tell us about this song? Why are we going to play this song?
So this is for my daughter, Makira. I lost a child to suicide.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to play this song, hey?
Tell me, what does it look like in heaven? Is it peaceful? Is it free like they say? Does the sun shine bright forever? Have your fears and your pain gone away?
They wonder how I can promise you now. This love that I feel for you always will be. Well, you're not just time that I'm killing. I'm no longer one of those guys. As sure as I live, this love that I give is gonna be yours until the day that I die.
Trouble working out what to put in your child's lunchbox every day? Nutritious food is essential for young and old. For a nutritious and healthy diet, it's important that our young ones get the right amount and types of food they need each day. All children, no matter what their weight, height, or age, need to eat from the five core food groups every day: vegetables, fruit, grains, lean meats and poultry, milk and dairy. One way to do this is to make sure that there's a wide variety of food in their lunchbox. Spending time planning a lunchbox menu can help you stay organised and save money along the way. A good idea is to pick a day that will be the day to plan their lunches for the rest of the week and write a shopping list of food you'll need. And remember, keeping up your fluid intake is just as important as eating, so include a bottle of water every day. For more information about health diets and nutrition, check out the Australian Guide to Healthy Eating at www.foodsmartschools.org or check out beamerprojects.org.au.
A message from the Staying Strong Project, funded by the Australian Government Department of Health.
This is Chelsea Bond with Let's Talk.
This is Chelsea Bond with Let's Talk, and I'm talking health with two deadly black women, Miss Sonia Eggert and Sissy Tyson, all the way from Inala Indigenous Health Service. We just had two very special song dedications to a beautiful young woman who we lost this year, Miss Makira, Sissy's daughter. And I want to thank you, Sissy, for sharing that dedication with us. And I, you know, you're someone that, for me, I've known you for a long time, and you're just this very staunch, very strong woman. And I wanted to know about how you cope, how you take care of yourself. What keeps you going?
I'd say my four other kids, my two grandkids, my brother and my partner, Tony. And, of course, work keeps me going.
Because I'm sure there are many listeners out here who have lost loved ones, and it's losing a child is a different kind of experience. And I'm you're someone who just keeps getting up every day, and I have such respect and admiration for how you do that. What do you just say to others who have experienced your pain?
I suppose you can't fall apart from it. You've still got to live, and you've still got others to worry and care for. And that's what keeps me going.
It's the care for others.
Yep.
You know, we know mental illness, mental health is a big issue in our community. We've shared our experience, my husband's experience more recently on television, and it's something that sometimes people aren't comfortable with talking about. And it was, you know, there's the campaign, Are You Okay? And we see a lot of mom now asking the question, checking in, Are You Okay? And I think sometimes it's not hard to ask that question. Sometimes it's hard to answer it.
That's true.
To say, I'm actually not okay today. Are you able to say, some days I'm not okay? Are you able to ask for help?
No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're stubborn.
It's hard to get out of bed every day. You know, how do you get out of bed every day with a broken heart? But as I said, it's the kids. You know, I think of my family and my work, and that's why I get up, or else I'd be still in bed. But I can't let myself go. I've still got to live. I just have to learn to live with a hole in my heart.
And, you know, having known you for some time, as a young woman, you had to learn to live without mum.
Yep.
So you have a long history of having to get up each day, and I just think it's you're very much, for me, a typical black woman in terms of no matter what comes at you, it's still have to get up each day. And there's a lot of black women out of Nala who do the same thing. There's something special, I think, about our women. Sonia, sitting here crying, we're all sitting here in tears. What do you think is important for our community to know around mental health and well-being?
That there's always somebody that is there to listen, and that people are loved and cared for.
I think it's often harder for our men to say it's not okay. I think for women, we can sit here and cry on live radio and not feel shame about it, because we can do that. But I think sometimes for our men, it's a bit harder to show pain, show hurt. How do you think we change that for our men? Or do you think we need to do more of that and more work around that in that area?
It's a hard one.
I think there needs to be more healing for Aboriginal people in general. I think that plays a huge part in mental health and mental health today. So I think that more needs to be done around healing and cultural identity. Because I think a lot of people, especially in areas like, you know, urban areas, but all over really, is just that, you know, we've lost our culture, and we need to bring that back.
Dealing with all kinds of loss. And I guess that makes me wild about some of the judgment statements around drug and alcohol use. You know, we see in Logan there's going to be some surveillance of people on unemployment with drug and alcohol testing. And you know, just like kids don't grow up wanting to be a researcher, I don't think kids grow up wanting to be, addicted to drugs and alcohol. Often it's a medicating a pain, which, you know, and trying to heal oneself, not the most productive way, but it's a way in which people are trying to medicate. And people don't understand the relationship between hurt and addiction, and that sometimes punishing people who have addiction or judging or having stigma around that actually is not addressing what's underlying that, and that is the pain that people are carrying. Do you think that kind of need to bring that space together a bit? Mm. I mean, and that's, I think, the importance about the International Overdose Awareness Day is it's also a time to remember and support families who are grieving as part of that healing and prevention.
Yeah.
Mm. Now, now we're about to finish up and I'm looking at the clock, but we've got to do some last shout-outs before we throw to our final song. Sissy, you've got to do some shout-outs to them.
So I've got the grandkids listening to the radios. They're yelling back at the radio, but we can't hear them.
Oh, please.
Say hello, Malachi and Shakyla.
Hi, Malachi and Shakyla.
Hey. Any other shout-outs you forgot? Because you know family's going to ring up, they're going to rouse you, they're going to be Facebooking you, they're writing statuses about you because you didn't shout out to them, you forgot them.
Well, I don't know if my brother's listening, but Jonathan, and of course I reckon Auntie Edie and Auntie Lorna would be listening, and Tony.
Oh, Auntie Edie, Auntie Lorna, big shout-out. They're two of the staunch black women I was thinking of. Yeah, that's where you get it from, hey? Sonia?
Yeah. I too want to give a shout-out to Auntie Lorna because I know she's listening. To my grandmother Sharon, who I've already mentioned.
Mum and Dad.
Mum and Dad.
Don't forget Mum and Dad.
Carl and Tamara.
And we're going to go out with an iconic song. You want to tell us about this song and we'll cut to it?
Oh, yeah. So this is one of Willy Boy's favourite songs that he likes on the CD that Auntie Annette Rabbit gave to me and played all the time. And, yeah, this is his favourite song, so I just thought I'd play it for him. So, yeah.
Dancing Aborigine.
Been around singing and dancing with my people throughout the night. Me and the brothers still going strong. I hear voices of my father. Anymore.